Welcome to the Health Fix Podcast, where health junkies get their weekly fix of tips, tools, and techniques to have limitless energy, sharp minds, and fit physiques for life. Hey, health junkies. On this episode of the Health Fix Podcast, I have Healthy Guts owner Stephen Wright back on, and we are talking about hair loss, which is such an annoying thing that happens with ladies, and how it's not being connected to gut issues, and in particular, low stomach acid. Because at the root of nutritional deficiencies is the stomach not producing enough acid to break down the foods for you to get the nutrients. Now, also a big factor, women who are struggling to eat protein, also big connector to hair loss. How does this happen? Low stomach acid. So, all right, health junkies, let's jump into this podcast with Stephen Wright on hair loss. Hey, health junkies, I have Stephen Wright on again today, and we are going to be talking about one of the topics that is so near and dear to my patients' hearts, not experienced it myself, but hair loss. It is a bugger. I will have people coming into my office showing me how much hair that they have lost. And it's, you know, it's tears, it's frustration. There's a lot of things going on with that. But the digestive system has a huge player in this department. So, Stephen, welcome to the Health Fix Podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Janine.
So I hear that you guys get some inquiries about hair loss and what folks can do in that department. And since you're more or less my personal gut guru at this point, what's the first thing that you would tell someone to explore when they call in or email in or text in, however they get a hold of you guys and say, what do I do about this hair loss business? How does my gut health affect the hair?
Yeah, the first thing is it starts with protein. But even higher than that, I like to try to give people like some conceptual ways of looking at this, which I think are very important. Mm-hmm. If we look at the body from a evolutionary standpoint or just a functioning standpoint, right? Like we look at how people die, they usually die bald, or they're losing hair everywhere. They're also losing sexual function. They're losing all the sort of non-important things to just living, mm-hmm. right? We have to breathe. We have to circulate. We have to create ATP. We have to, you know, shuttle oxygen around. There's lots of things that are very important to just being inside of this body. Hair isn't, you know, hair, muscles, you know, things like that, sexual organ function, these aren't necessarily important to being alive. And therefore, the body's always going to prioritize the thing that keeps us alive versus the sort of preferences or things that signal to the world that we're healthy and sexy. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really important just to stop and say like, hey, if you're someone who's having hair, skin, and nail issues, sexual organ dysfunction, things like this, that's like secondary. That means there's like your body doesn't even have enough nutrients or enough capacity to service those areas of your body. And so then we have to look at why is that and what are the components that would allow the body to actually build that area. And so in hair, in this case, it's protein. Most of your hair is made of amino acids. Of course, the cells cannot be overly stressed. You can't have too much inflammation, oxidative stress. Otherwise, they will die out. They'll go gray first and then they'll die out. And so we're going to talk about, you know, hormones and inflammation and things like this. But I would say the easiest step is to focus on protein and focus on your digestion of the protein you're eating.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I would wholeheartedly agree. And one of the things we had talked about before we hit record is that so many women will avoid eating protein because it just doesn't feel good. It gets in and it's like a lump in the gut. And there's not this common knowledge. I posted before on social and people are always like, what? Stomach acid? Wait, I'm on omeprazole or I'm on this particular med or that particular med. Is that affecting me? And it's like, yes. So obviously you've heard, you know, a lot of people that have struggled with digesting protein. And what is your protocol? Kind of what do you guys recommend for folks? And obviously, guys, they're not medical providers. This is just, we're talking about things in a nice little conversation here.
And maybe you could pick up little things that you could try out, should you say. But what's, you know, in terms of your products, you've got the HCL Guard, right? And we've got Holozymes. So which product would people want to be looking at? What kind of things help them break down amino acids? Let's talk about that. Like, how do you break down proteins to get to amino acids? Maybe I better say it that way.
Yeah. Well, it goes right back to that lump, right? Like, let's say you eat some protein, whether it's a piece of steak or a chicken breast or something, and it just feels like a lump inside of your body. That is a lump of protein that's not being acidified. It's not being sort of broken open at a molecular level. Mm-hmm. The acid basically opens up the protein structures, and the acid that we're talking about the stomach here, and omeprazole, PPIs, Tums. I would say the default almost in today's world is low stomach acid these days, mm-hmm. it appears. And we are highly addicted to many drugs and many drug classes that continue to lower stomach acid because we have stress and, you know, we live this Western lives and we're all trying to, you know, be amazing parents as well as sexy, as well as, you know, make $1 million. Like, we're trying to be it all. And it's hard to do that in the time that we live and still keep our bodies running at tip-top shape. And so all of that stress, the pharmaceutical usage, all that stuff lowers stomach acid. And then when you do eat protein, if you have the desire, then it feels like a lump of coal or just a lump of brick just sitting there. You might have some acid reflux, or, you know, you might just have IBS. I don't know, because basically, if it goes wrong in the stomach, it's really hard for the intestines to make it up the rest of the way. It's like you put diesel in a gasoline car. Like, you just gave it the wrong fuel to start with, and every other part of the body is going to try to make up for it. But if the acid doesn't open up the protein structures, it's almost like a closed flower versus an open flower. The sun opens the flower up, and then you have these petals. And in this case, the stomach acid opens the flower up. Now you have these petals, and now the enzymes can come in and cleave off the little flower petals and turn them into amino acids. If not, you got the enzymes working on the outside of the flower, like the flower bud, and it just can't really get in there to get the petals off. And if it does, it's not going to be in a very clean way, and it's not going to be full digestion. And so I think a lot of people associate hair loss with like hypothyroidism and some other things, but it's very prevalent with all the conditions related to the gut. And I think a lot of that is because of this malabsorption of protein that happens over a long time period. It's not like we just wake up and we have like low stomach acid. It's generally been going on for maybe decades, but definitely years usually before the signs and symptoms start. Because again, the body's going to take those proteins, those amino acids, and it's going to give them to your muscle. It's going to give them to your cellular repair. Every cell in your body needs amino acids to repair itself. And then as it starts running out of these amino acids, then things like hair begin to get less and less, amount of the available amino acids. And then that's when it starts to show, you know, many years after it started. So I would start always with the stomach, with something like HCL Guard from our company, betaine HCL with pepsin from another company. Start with an HCL challenge and verify that even when you eat protein, you can digest it. And then we can also talk about, are we eating enough protein? Because that's another issue.
Huge issue. And yeah, I think that's, I mean, unfortunately, we're kind of primed to like, let's get our macros in. And a lot of people are like, I'm eating all the things, but my hair is still falling out. Well, we didn't go back to step one. Now, you mentioned something that I think's important to mention on here is the HCL challenge. That test is somewhat scary for a lot of people, thinking I'm putting beet acid into my stomach. Why would I do that? Because we've all been brainwashed. Like, even the problem's low stomach acid, we've all been brainwashed that acid reflux, too much stomach acid. We have too much of that. And so if we think about like, okay, betaine hydrochloric, I'm going to add that to my system. Okay. Can you do that particular test with HCL Guard since it has licorice and other things in it? I feel like it protects while testing a little bit there, because you've got the two things in there.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely going to offer a different experience than other HCL products, but it's still 550 milligrams of betaine HCL per capsule, which is still a very you know, more than 500 milligrams is a pretty standard dose. Somewhere between 500 and 700 is most companies' amount of betaine. So yeah, you can still get reliable data by taking one capsule. I think most people who have either loose stools from one capsule, or they have like some sort of burning heat sensation, they need to take a little baking soda, swallow it down and feel better. I think most of those individuals are having like just normal acid production, or they have an ulcer. Or the precondition to an ulcer, which would be, you know, inflammation of the stomach line and gastritis. And so I still think even with HCL guard, you know, if you have normal, you know, normal acid, you probably won't get as much heat, but you might get the loose stools, right? You just don't need it. Your body doesn't want it, and it will change things. So you'll get that feedback. Maybe if you have the gastritis or ulcer experience, maybe it burns a little less with our product because of the DGL. You know, I don't know. There's no study on that. That's just theory. But I do know that like the majority of doctors who have the capacity to test stomach acid in their office, when they test people, it's like 70 to 80% of people they test have low acid. And so, you can pay, you know, $300, $400 for this test if you can find a doctor who has the machine, or for less than $50 in 1 week of your, you know, even a few days of your time, you could figure this out on your own. And so I think, you know, I think in a world where we're trying to figure out like, what can we do to offset these computers and this 5Gs and the stress and the news cycles and everything else, we give a lot of hope and power to things like magnesium and vitamin D. And I just wish we'd give similar hope and power to our stomach. Just let the stomach support the stomach to be what it was supposed to be. And I feel like it maximizes everything else, just like supporting vitamin D does.
That's a huge, I mean, it's a huge thing we overlook is the power of the stomach. The Chinese talk all about stomach fire and needing to make sure you've got that fire stoked, which is ultimately stomach acid. And like 5,000 years ago, in a lot of the writings, when they're talking about spleen and stomach energy, which by the way, folks who are listening to this, if you're not well-versed in the Chinese medicine world, spleen and stomach qi is considered the same thing. And so what I'm getting at is that what Stephen's talking about is the heat needing to give the body a little oomph. That's why, you know, do you think, Stephen, that a lot of people actually gravitate towards spicier foods because their digestive system isn't working like it should? What do you think about that? What have you observed?
I would say that humans are amazing at finding something that makes them feel good and then creating a story that's not even related to why they chose that. I think that, you know, if you're listening to this and you're like, I don't like protein, it doesn't feel good to me, like I believe your experience is true. The story you have about your genetics or your family or why you shouldn't have protein is probably not true. It's probably something like low stomach acid or low enzyme function, something like that. So similarly with spicy food, maybe that's part of it. You know, it might kick off a little extra acid. I do think that's why some people, there's a little bit of data on wine and there's some data on alcohol and stomach acid. And so what I've read is that one glass of wine actually kind of increases acidity. But if you start going beyond one glass, you go to two glasses, or you mix in liquor, hard alcohol, it suppresses stomach acid function. So if you have one glass of wine, maybe, and you like digest life better, you digest your food better, then there might be something to that scientifically. But if you let loose on a Friday with your friends and then you have bad digestion the next day, it might have been because you turned off, you know, your stomach acid just as much as having a little gluten or having a little, you know, carbohydrate that you don't normally have.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. So I'm thinking about it, right? And I'm going back to the days when I, you know, college and who am I kidding, beyond? Let's be real here. You know, you get together with your friends, you're enjoying yourself. One drink turns into three or so. And you obviously also lose that capability of how much you're eating too. So now you kind of have that double trouble. And yes, I've spent many a day the day after a fun little night with my friends in the bathroom. And And I think it's not, you know, uncommon for a lot of people to experience this, but what if, I mean, thinking about like, what if this is an everyday thing for you? I want to kind of bring this to light for folks to kind of think about a little bit, you know, maybe one glass is good, but, you know, kind of back to that moderation. So maybe we could have people testing their hydrochloric needs, but also testing if wine will do a little good for you in the same sense.
Yeah, there's, for instance, here's another fascinating thing, right? So some people will, in the south of the United States, at least where my grandma was from. So my grandma was from Tennessee, South Tennessee. And when I was a boy and I had a stomach ache, which I was born with, you know, stomach problems, so I had a lot of stomach aches, she would give me a Coke. And in their culture there, they knew that if you had a stomach ache, drink a Coke. Well, Coke, you know, Coca-Cola, the original brand, is like 2.4-5-ish or 2.4-ish on the acidity scale. And we want to get our stomach acid down to below 2 to fully digest our food and make sure the dumping happens appropriately. Now you could say that has evolved and now everybody's into apple cider vinegar. Well, apple cider vinegar is even slightly more acidic. So it's like a 2.35-ish on the acid scale, depending on, you know, what you're drinking. And so people are like, well, I do so much better when I take a shot of apple cider vinegar. Well, yeah, that makes sense. If you have low stomach acid and you might think it's about the probiotics or some sort of like special mother of the world or the I don't know, whatever story you tell yourself, but it could be just simply that you have low stomach acid and you're introducing just enough acidity to get you to that level where you can break down your food. And I find that extremely fascinating. I also find it extremely fascinating. I found a study that said if you do a shot of apple cider vinegar every day, like 1 ounce of it, over 12 weeks, the people lost like an extra 6 pounds or something. You know, it was material. Like, you know, yeah. Hey, that's not a lot of hard work to lose some weight, like a half pound a week or something like that. And they're speculating all these ideas about why they lost the weight. And like one of the ideas just could be that. There's research showing that if you have high acid, your LPS that gets from your mouth. So our teeth are full of microbes and our saliva is just chock full of intense microbes. And some of them are not good. And then we swallow that all day long. And the stomach is supposed to detoxify. It's supposed to kill off the LPS, which are the toxins essentially from the cell wall of the bacteria. If we get too many LPS, like, if you multiply LPS by 1,000 and you get like full LPS, you get sepsis, you get total like death. Sepsis is, you know, leaking LPS into the body everywhere. It's not good. So a little LPS is totally normal. It's happened all day long. But if your acidity is above a 4 on a regular basis, this study showed almost a 2,000-fold increase of LPS in the lower stomach and in the small intestine, just by having a 4 instead of a 2 on the pH scale for your stomach. So maybe the apple cider vinegar was just killing some of the incoming LPS, which, you know, lowered some of the inflammation. Maybe it helped these people digest their nutrients. And so they ate less food. Like there's all these potential reasons why apple cider vinegar or helping our stomach have a lower pH might be beneficial. And yet we make up all these stories about what's happening.
I'm cracking up because the mother of the kombucha or the whatever. And I laugh about it only because, yep, that's nice. Cause I'm thinking the same thing you are. I'm going, okay, well, you got low stomach acid. All right. Well, maybe we could protect your teeth a little and get something a little stronger for you. You know, and give your body what it really wants. But I think for ladies, let's put it this way. If something can have us lose weight, we're all over it. And some ladies will even be like, Steven, I got diarrhea and I'm happy. Cause if I have diarrhea, that means I'm gonna lose weight. Like ladies are, we're cool.
I've heard it.
I'm sure you have. We're a little batty sometimes. And like, yeah, we're like, you know, guys will be like, oh my God, I have diarrhea. Chicks are like, yes, I might lose a couple pounds. Never mind, you'll gain it back, you know, when things adjust. But, you know, that's the interesting part about apple cider vinegar, though, because I think a lot of people aren't connecting that at all, that's what it's doing. And, you know, I've even been told by some folks like, hey, I've been taking this and, you know, my digestive system's better. I don't have acid reflux anymore and the whole thing. But they never linked it to, even though they're telling me they don't have acid reflux, it's not the digestive system that it was the probiotics in it. And you're like, okay. The story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, look, I would say some of the best stories I hear, and like, look, I this is not like a new thing for me. I started taking personally BTNHCL and Pepsin in 2010, mm-hmm. and I've been on dosages. For a while, I was doing like 12 or 13 capsules per day for over a few years. I then worked all the way down to like suddenly 4, and then like it tiered down. Like it didn't just go from 12 to 4, but over time, over like 4 years, I got down to like 2, and then I was like, whoa, I read about this in some books from Dr. Jonathan Wright. Maybe I restored all the missing nutrients in my body, and I retrained my stomach how much acid to make, and now I can go off. So I went off for many years, mm-hmm. and then life happened, and business blew up, and cancer came all over my family, and I had to deal with a lot of things, and then house trouble, and boom, my stomach acid was low again. And then, now I'm taking like 3 HCL guard per meal. And so my point being that I've talked with people prior to formulating a supplement about this and coached them as a consultant. And there's a few things that people really who have low stomach acid, who try this, who report these really cool things. The first is it's like a light switch for their energy. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of people out there with brain fog and low energy or chronic fatigue. I'm not saying this fixes any of that, but it's just like, if you're not getting the B12, the B vitamins, if you're not getting the amino acids from your food because your stomach acid's so low, and then suddenly you start to liberate those vitamins and those nutrients and increase the ability to absorb the amino acids. For some folks, maybe 10 to 20% of people, it's like, holy cow, a light switch has gone on and I got my energy back. For some folks, that other 10 to 20%, it's like their hair just starts, coming back after, 3 to 6 weeks of usage, right? It can take a little while, right? Again, if you have a really low bucket of vitamins and minerals and nutrients, your body's going to fill that up. And first it's going to go try to fix other things, right? It's going to go try to fix blood vessels and muscles and bones and things like that. And then when there's a surplus, it's going to be like, cool, now you can have your hair. That's great. And so skin, hair, and then energy are like really underrated reasons to try an HCL challenge and see if this is part of, what's happening for you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. Skin, hair, I mean, even mood, I think, and thyroid stuff too. I find that when I really work on optimizing digestion in my thyroid folks, that's a whole nother thing. And then, I think you probably, I have some notes here that I've seen where you've talked about the thyroid as well, and kind of that connection between, yes, the hair drops off a little bit with the thyroid. Yes, some people will lose some of their eyebrows with the thyroid, but really when we look at it, I think a lot of thyroid stuff too, because the nutrients has to do with that stomach acid. What have you heard, because I know we have a connection here in terms of you hearing some things. What's kind of a common thing that you get on your side of the folks?
Well, yeah, I think most people associate hair loss with thyroid at this point. Like, I have a thyroid issue. Mm-hmm. And there's been an amazing awareness in the last 6 to 10 years around like thyroid conditions and thyroid testing. And I think that's been amazing. And I think I, for one, thought for sure I was hypothyroid, and I've run my thyroid antibodies probably like 20 times and I'm never positive. And I've run my T3s and my reverse T3s and my free T3s and my T4s and all the same ones. And like, I'm always like never really just that sick as far as the markers would think. And I'm always just like, dang it. And so I think there's a lot of folks out there like me who are wondering like, man, I read these things about what like low thyroid is, maybe energy or mood or hair loss. And like, man, that's me. I definitely am that. And what, Dr. Ruscio actually just published some papers showing that a lot of potential hypothyroid might just be gut dysfunction, because there's actually, I think it's about 30% of our T4 to T3 conversion happens in the gut, mm-hmm. right? In the gut cells. And so if you think about that, like, let's say everything else is working perfectly, like everything else is 100% unlikely, but let's just say that for this conversation, but you lose your gut, right? Like, let's say you have low stomach acid. That low stomach acid causes the malabsorption of your food. And then that food goes into the small intestine where the enzymes can't break it down. Now you create dysbiosis in the microbiome. You might create the conditions for SIBO or candida, and you're having IBS or IBS like issues accompanied with maybe some mood, some low energy, some hair loss. You lose that 30%. Well, if you lost 30% of your energy capacity or 30% of your hair growth capacity, you would notice, right? That's a big deal. And so I think the crazy thing is that you might be able to just work on the gut and the thyroid stuff may come back. As long as you don't have that auto antibody thing that's happening, as long as you've been screened for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you, it's funny you mentioned that, like you were like looking at your labs, you've done all the things in terms of the labs and you were like, I swear it's my thyroid. I think that's very common for a lot of ladies to also think that as well. And, you know, I always run the gamut of them and see, but what I can tell you, and maybe even notice this with yourself too, as your thyroid did improve, did you notice that your T3 and your T3 uptake boosted up a little bit? For a lot of people, I've seen that improve, and that's when I know the gut's improving.
Yeah, it's definitely correlated too with my stress and my adrenals. My when I first started testing, my reverse T3 was through the roof. And so I was, you know, I was definitely not processing T3 as I should. And then over the years, it's come down and gotten better. If I tested right now, you know, luckily this remodel's kind of done and stress is slightly less than what it was earlier this year. I would say they're probably better. But again, I've done my numbers like, you know, I was doing them like every quarter for like 5 or 6 years there. So I kind of know probably where they're at. I had never actually thought about the idea of gut health as a relation to thyroid, like, you know, charting where I was with my gut and being like, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I don't have a lot of sensitivities. My skin's pretty good. I'm not experiencing this. Where's my T3 numbers at? But I'm due for a round of tests. So I like tracking that in the future. It makes total sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Take a look. It's one of the things, like if I'm working hardcore on someone's gut, I will also look at their thyroid levels to be like, all right, are things improving? Cause yeah, like you said, 30-40% of those T4 to T3 conversions. And folks, T4 is what comes out of your thyroid. Your body naturally will convert to T3 in the cells. And in particular, we're talking 30-40% in the gut, some in the liver, and then the other 60 is all in your other tissues. Now, of course, what we didn't mention is mitochondria. If there's something going on in the mitochondria, that's a whole nother factor. And you gotta either if you're bio-tuning, as I'm gonna call it now, tuning yourself up, you know what's up. But if you don't know, that's when you want to work with someone, you know, that knows kind of a little bit more in that department. But for the sake of this conversation and looking at the hair and things of that nature, I think it's really important to get the whole picture and really not just keep in your mind of honing in on it's gotta be my thyroid, it's gotta be just my gut, it's gotta be just this. It's look the whole stinking picture in the realm of things.
Yeah. Cause look, you could have a biotin deficiency or a zinc deficiency or a copper deficiency, and that will mess up your hair for sure. You know, you could have low T3 and that could mess up your hair for sure. You could have like super low estrogen and that'll, you know, the rest that'll mess up your hair for sure. But the funny thing is you need zinc for stomach acid. you need estrogen for stomach acid. You need T3 for stomach acid. So like, you can't necessarily just have one of these root causes without also having typically gut dysfunction. And so I think that's where hopefully, you know, podcasts like this, messages like this, you know, you and I are going to get the message out to other folks that you, yeah, sure, someone might have estrogen or progesterone related issues, but if you're not working on the gut along with those hormones, you know, we're not going to get them out of this dysfunction. And the same thing I think is true with hair. Like you can totally take a hair, skin and nail supplement that's got these, you know, these nutrients that might be low, but if you're not supporting the gut through that process, you're sort of just like putting duct tape on a leaky boat, hoping that it's going to keep you afloat, and it's going to fail at some point.
Right. And for the most part, when I look at these hair, skin, nail products, most people aren't getting results from them at all. That's the sad part, is that, you know, it's a huge industry. I'm sure they make billions on just hair, skin and nails products alone. And unfortunately, that's where I'm seeing things. I'm not seeing that happen in terms of them being useful. Now, one thing, oh, you're going to say something.
I'll put out like a test out there. Yeah. And I know you work with athletes and stuff. So I have a belief that like chronically unwell people or people who are fighting against some like inside issues, whether that's like mitochondria or it's like truly like IBS or IBD or whatever it might be, I think that their bodies have the exact same needs as high-end athletes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really wise to look at what athletes take, because they know they're being depleted inside their body because they're pushing their body so hard. And then look at what somebody who's sick and losing their hair, why wouldn't they need the same things? And so what I would challenge people, and most athletes have this and most sick people have this, which is both would be super benefited by taking like an essential amino acid supplement at like 10 grams to 15 grams a day. And so if you want to test whether my hypothesis is right, that you have low protein, low amino acids, and likely due to low stomach acid over the last few years or decades, take 10 to 15 grams of essential amino acids daily for a month or two and see what happens with your hair. I would hope that you'll also do the HCL challenge at the same time. And then you can sort of replenish the stock inside your body as well as counteract what's happening on a daily basis. But I find that people have like amazing breakthroughs in energy, hair, skin, and nails. Other things are just sort of like firing for the first time. And so hopefully people can try that as well.
Oh, I love it. I love it. What would be your go-to for those 10 grams of aminos? Where should they be looking? Because I think a lot of people are going to be like, where do I find a powder like that? What, where do I go to?
So there's a ton of them on say like Amazon or, you know, like Wellevate, or you can search the internet. I would say two brands come to mind that I like using. Perfect Amino is one brand that I've used extensively. I do like their tablets. And then as far as powders go, I think I like Keon's powder at this point. I think they've done a little bit better job with flavoring than okay. Perfect Amino has done. And so, yeah, either one of those companies for, you know, whether you're a powder taker or a tablet taker, essential amino acids don't blend well. Do not get the unflavored version. I've tried it several times. You will regret that. So tablets, which are pretty big, they're kind of horse pills and can be very hard for some people to take. I prefer those, but for instance, my fiance prefers the powder.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people whose guts are a little bit wonky, the tablets might not get digested. So I would be thinking, you know, the powder's probably the way to go. And Keon, that's Ben Greenfield's company, right? Isn't that his?
Yeah. He's part owner in that.
Yeah. So, I mean, at least guys, you got some, obviously Stephen wouldn't suggest anything that wasn't heavily backed with some good research and some good stuff. But in this case, yeah, Keon, I would look into them. And yeah, don't do unflavored, because I tried that before too. We could probably do a whole podcast of what not to try on its own. Speaking of which, like tributrin, for example, you've got that covering the gross butyrate issue for things. And so let's kind of move from hair and kind of give folks, okay, we know that like at this point, guys, your MO is to work on your stomach acid. Then folks are probably thinking, all right, I get my stomach acid going. What do I need to do after that? So now I'm going to segue us into the rest of the gut health protocol. So after someone got their stomach acid back up online, rebooted, because that's one thing a lot of people ask me, like, do I have to take 8 pills of this betaine hydrochloric for the rest of my life? And I'm like, no, your stomach will reboot. So let's talk about rebooting. And then like, what would be their next step in their journey of helping their gut and using your products in particular?
Yeah. So I like just going anatomy top to bottom and how the system sort of processes food. And so if you test positive that you need some stomach acid support, so in other words, you do the HCL challenge and you feel better from 1 pill or 2 pills or 3 pills or 4 pills or whatever it takes you, I would say that basically your body's been living in a state where you're forcing your pancreas and your brush water enzymes to like really handle not the best conditions, right? They're like, I wouldn't call it, I don't know what to call it, slave labor is what came up, but that might not be allowed to say anymore. But basically you're forcing them to work, you know, 24-hour shifts in bad conditions. And so giving them support and a break once you start to fix your stomach or support your stomach, I think is also really helpful, as well as I believe, and I don't know if this is your belief, I'd love to hear it, is that part of what we're doing like the first 3 months of some of these gut protocols is we're really grabbing a bunch of missing nutrients that have been missing for a long time. And we're sort of restocking the shelves inside of our body and handling things we couldn't, you know, we're doing like a backlog of projects basically that we weren't able to do because we had a rate limiting step of not enough magnesium, not enough zinc, not enough calcium, whatever it might be. And so when we use something like HCL and enzymes, we're grabbing a bunch of vitamins and nutrients that we haven't been getting. And the body's like, kind of excited. It's running a lot of processes it hasn't been able to run. And then it's trying to store as much as it can. For some folks, this process takes 6 months. And some folks, it takes 9 months to a year. But if you're kind of new to this and you haven't gotten too banged up or you're younger, like under 40, maybe 3 to 6 months is all you'll need. But in that first 3 to 6 months, I think if you can do HCL and enzymes, I think you're really going to see a pretty magnificent transformation, both in your gut on a daily basis, the foods you can eat, but also just like things slowly get better week over week if you can stay objective and track them in a journal. Otherwise, you'll probably go to an appointment with Dr. Janine and you'll be like, nothing's happening. And it's been only 8 weeks. And you'll pull up your notes from week zero and you'll remind them that their hair was falling out in clumps and they couldn't get out of bed. And, you know, and then, you know, that stuff's not happening. But we, you know, I've seen that because we're just humans, just we lose perspective as we go. We normalize really quickly to whatever's happening. But I would say enzymes is the next step. Give the body some rest. Make sure it can get all the nutrients from its food. We're starting to reset dysbiosis. And we're all starting to make sure that the gut is less inhabitable for things like SIBO and other infections of the small intestine, which I really like because you'll probably be running a test on them, checking them for a parasite, checking them for an overgrowth. And when you find that, you'll have to go after it. But if you don't change the incoming conditions, you'll just recreate it. And that part, I don't know how to ever get this across to people. It's like, you got to fortify the defenses before you go, you know, kill the intruders. Otherwise the intruders can just walk right back through. And so it ends up being this thing where it's very holistic in whatever else is going on, whether you have hypothyroid, whether you have estrogen or progesterone issues, or you have a parasite, these steps of stomach support and enzyme support will support the outcome wherever it needs to go next.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And I think the most important thing you mentioned there was that you can't just keep going on kill protocols without helping the digestive system work properly. And I think most people end up having obviously the dysbiosis because the stomach acid isn't there to keep the pH down in the small intestine. I mean, in the stomach, and then changes as it gets into the small intestine, but it's keeping it, you know, and further down into the colon. I mean, we're not keeping that right balance from the get-go. And I think that's why people have yeast over and over and over again. It's a circle.
Yeah, it'd be like, you know, if you're looking at it from like a castle perspective, it'd be like if the front gates of the castle are like inoperable, but you keep, you know, trying to get the archers to keep shooting arrows and people can just walk right through the front gates, you know, over and over and over again. You know, that's, we got to put the gate down. We got to close the gate off first. And then you can handle whatever's gotten in or whatever's trying to get in. And I feel like, unfortunately, people have to take the long road. And they have to, you know, bang their head against multiple killing protocols only to realize that, you know, there's some other things going on. And so we'd like to help you guys skip that step if you need to.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the case, you know, one of the things I really want to make a comment of and see how you've seen it too, is when folks have just dysbiosis, there's nothing super pathogenic, super elevated. Most of the time I'm going to be like, I'm not going to try to kill things. I'm going to give you some stomach acid. We're going to use it that way and see how you do. Is that kind of how you've seen things roll on your end too? It adjusts things as well.
Yeah. So when I was a consultant, and then when we had our clinic and we had some functional medicine practitioners under sort of like seeing everybody, and I was more like the, you know, marketing and business person for it. This was like 2013, 2014. And back then it was like, if they have IBS, or any sort of digestive related issues, dysbiosis tests were not that good at that point, then go for like a general killing program all the time. Because the hypothesis was, is that there's something there, we just can't find it. Now, stool testing and microbiome testing is just like made quantum leaps in its capacity. It's still primitive as far as I'm concerned, like as far as like a engineer repeatability, like specificity, it's still a little primitive, but it's made, you know, 100x leaps in the last 5 years. And I think that's important because I think to your point, well, I think what we're learning is that the big nasty things are findable. Yeah. We find those on a regular basis. And unfortunately for those folks, and fortunately actually for those folks who just have generalized dysbiosis, it's probably more about, like you said, the stomach acid, the enzymes, and then maybe they need some prebiotics or probiotics to kind of just help gently shift that flora over time, or generate butyrate, which is might have been where you were going with that, which is typically what creates the conditions for a healthy microbiome. And so I think where I would go if I had a practice today would be like, if we don't find a nasty pathogen, then we're not doing a killing protocol. We're going to focus on butyrate, HCL enzymes. And if you can't tolerate the prebiotics needed to build butyrate, then we're going to use tributyrin X.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be my MO too. And I was just curious to see kind of what camp you were in. So folks, we've talked about a lot of things gut, and I think we've geeked out hard. So I think folks are might be like, whoa, I need to take some notes and repeat this. So feel free to rewind and go right back. I'll have notes for you guys, of course, at drjcarlsond.com. So, all right, we got to tell folks what's going on over at Healthy Gut and what's next for you. Cause I know that some magnesium came out since we've chatted last. And what else is on the mind over there at the Healthy Gut folks?
Well, it sounds like by the time this comes out, we will have released a new supplement called B-Serene, mm-hmm. Which I'll be getting you some samples. And it's an adaptogenic blend of 5 herbs from around the world that are all helpful from a stress supporting, anxiety supporting, adrenal supporting standpoint. And the big sort of like highlight or breakthrough is an herb called Mulungu. And Mulungu comes out of South America. And basically there's a guy, Dr. Morgan Camp. We've been friends on and off for years, and he had a lot of social anxiety, and he tried to go down there to like do ayahuasca or some sort of like shaman experience. Instead of giving him that, they gave him this herb and the tea from this herb and said, hey, you actually need to start here and sort of like calm your nervous system down and sort of rebuild the various pathways in that regard. And so he brought this idea up, and he's worked with some other herbalists to find the right blend of herbs to support these pathways. And it's been extremely supportive for my mom. And I take it as well, just from you know, I get anxious, and it's just supportive from an adrenal standpoint, as well as just helping me calm down at night. So it's like the herbal blend helps regulate cortisol. Chivardi root is in there, which is super helpful for some women in menopause and sort of supporting those areas. And then the Mulungu is really nice for the sort of anxiety supporting benefits. And so it's just a really cool, super packed herbal blend. It's like, you know, the serving size is 2 caps, like 1400 milligrams of extracted wow. herbs. So it's like legit strong. And so, yeah, we'll hopefully have that out there. And basically this company, Dr. Camp formulated it 2 years ago. He's had it on the market, but he wanted to focus more on his practice. And so he's sort of joining us in a part-time capacity, and we're taking on the product line, and we removed the fillers, made it stronger, made it a little bit more efficacious. And so we're going to carry on his torch there.
Very cool. Very cool. And you guys, if you've listened to any of our previous podcasts, you know, Stephen doesn't mess around with sourcing. And of course he had just mentioned he pulls the fillers out. So this is a big deal. And I look forward to hearing more about it. I'm hoping we could do another podcast and we'll talk about that, so folks can hear about that as well, because I think the Mulungu, I've not heard of it before. So this is all new in my world. Mulungu, is that what it
is? Yeah.
Okay. All right. Mulungu, guys. Buzzword. Stay tuned for that. So Stephen, thank you so much for coming on again. I appreciate it. We'll make sure that folks get to learn more about what they can do about their hair loss, but also this Mulungu. Now you got me curious, and I think a lot of folks are going to be wondering, what is this? So we'll have to just stay tuned till next time.
Yeah, stay tuned till next time. Try the amino acids, try the HCL for your hair loss. I think if you give it, you know, 6 to 12 weeks, you'll see benefit.
All righty. We'll definitely put all that in the show notes, folks. And I want to hear from you guys. So let us know how you do. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
Hey, fellow health junkie. Thanks for listening to the Health Fix podcast. If you enjoyed tuning in, please help support me to get the word out about the podcast. Subscribe, rate, and review, and just get that word out. Thanks again for listening.